Okay, everybody, it's 6:30. Lovely sunny evening, so we'll make a start, if that's okay. Welcome, everybody, to the first meeting of the new audit committee. I thought, if that's okay, we'd start by just doing a few quick introductions. I think Councillor Hudson's the only returning member, so it might be useful just to go around the room and say here we are and where we're from. I'll start off. Aaron Mansfield, Councillor for East Oxford Heath Ward, newly elected and Chair of the Committee. Our members first, okay, thank you. Over to Councillor Bailey.
My name is Adriana Bailey. I'm a newly elected councillor, Labour Party, and Horninglow and Outwood.
Thank you. Good evening. Michael Slater, newly elected councillor for Horninglow and Outwoods. Thank you.
Bernard Peters, sitting councillor for Brislingcote.
Phil Hudson, the sitting councillor for Crown Ward. I am the past chairman of this committee as well.
Steve Sankey, sitting councillor for Stramshill and Weaver.
Thank you. And Lisa, do you want to go first and we'll work our way back round?
Yep. Lisa Turner, Interim Chief Financial Officer in Section 151.
Anya Murray, Interim Chief Accountant and Deputy Section 151 Officer.
Monica Henscliffe, Democratic Services Clerk.
Ruby Dio, formerly of CW Audit, but from the 1st of April, 360 Assurance and your internal audit provider.
Hi, Andy Smith. I'm the external audit engagement lead from Grant Thornton.
Great. Thanks. We have Councillor Chowdhury at the back joining us tonight. Excellent. First item on the agenda is apologies. Over to Monica.
We have apologies from Councillor Hadley and Councillor Huckabee.
Thanks, Monica. Item number two, declarations of interest. Anybody anything they'd like to declare? That's a no. Item three is the appointment of a vice chairman for the committee. To start off nominations, I'd like to nominate Councillor Bailey. Anyone to second?
Yes, I'll second it. Yeah.
Thank you. Any more nominations? That's no. Okay, so move to a vote on Councillor Bailey as vice chairman. All those in favour? Thanks. Okay. Anyone against? Abstentions? Thank you. Congratulations, Councillor Bailey. Item four, minutes of the previous meeting. Obviously, I think there was only Phil in terms of members who were present at that meeting. But proposal to approve the minutes. Thank you, I'll sign those. Item five, any urgent business? We don't have any urgent business tonight, so we can move on from that. Item six, the draft audit committee training programme. That's over to Lisa to present the report.
Thank you, Chair. So circulated with the agenda was a draft training plan for the committee. It's based on a similar programme we've utilised in previous years and has been well received. The first two sessions, the role of the audit committee and the role of internal audit, have already been delivered earlier this week. And for those members that were unable to attend, both the slides and the video recording are available on the member intranet. So on that basis, Chair, I'll pass back to you for any questions or comments or observations.
Thank you, Lisa. Over to colleagues for any questions and comments. Okay, excellent. Thank you, Lisa. Moving on to number seven, first of the meaty ones, is the audit report for 21-22, and so to colleagues from Grant Thornton. So, Andy, I believe you're taking that one.
Thank you, Chair. So, yes, this is our annual auditor report for 21-22. Just before I get into the detail of this report, just an update in terms of the 21-22 audit, because that is not yet signed off. As previously discussed at the last audit committee meeting, which you may have seen in the minutes, the delays are around the valuations of some of the assets owned by the council. And the council has obviously sought new valuations from a new valuer to address them, and we will be reviewing those valuations in due course once received, and I believe that is in progress at the moment. So hopefully by the time of the next meeting we can be reporting back and finalising that audit to you, assuming of course there's no issues in the new valuations. In terms of this report, this is largely our commentary upon what we describe the value for money arrangements in place at the council. So it looks at three areas. One is financial sustainability, one is governance, and the other is effectively how the council tries to improve how it spends taxpayers' money. Pleased to say that we haven't identified any significant weaknesses in the council's arrangements that were in place in 21-22. We did do some quite detailed work, particularly around risk, and also kind of the work that the council was doing to address some of the issues that had been highlighted by the peer review in terms of governance, but we were kind of pleased with what we'd seen in terms of progress on both of those areas. So whilst there is still a bit of work to do around particularly risk management arrangements, we are happy with the progress that has been made and what's been put into place to date. There were a number of improvement recommendations around governance that were made in the report, and they start on page 13. The first one was around risk reporting and some improvements that could be made around that, and hopefully they can be incorporated going forward as the new risk arrangements are put into place. There was also a recommendation there around the work of scrutiny committees and them being a bit more proactive in setting a work programme, and hopefully they can have greater impact going forward. And then the final one was really around some of the capacity issues in the finance team, given there's been a bit of turnover. So they're the only three improvement recommendations we've raised. I say overall this is, I would say, a positive report, and on the basis that there aren't any significant concerns being raised in this report, and all of the recommendations have been discussed and agreed with management, so we are confident that they'll be addressed going forward. On that basis, I will take any questions if there are any, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Over to colleagues. Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Chair. I'm particularly concerned about the accounts being closed, and I'm aware of, to a degree, of the situation regarding getting replacement valuers in. But obviously, it is quite long. It's a long time since they should have been closed. Now, you haven't given indication of a date of when they'll be signed off. And also, in the report, it talks about that they will be dependent on, unless I've misunderstood it, dependent on the introduction of a new Terrier system, which is a software. Now, I don't know whether that is the commercial property. It's not your report, it's the internal.
Yeah, it's the internal, yeah.
Yeah, it's the internal one. But is that a prerequisite of you, the information being in that IT system, for you to sign it off, or is it just that you've got the new valuers and once you've given that information, that'll be fine?
It is just a case of it around getting the new valuations, which I believe that have been received by the council, but I think there's been a bit of back and forth for the values, so we've not yet received the new valuations, but once they're received we can then do our work.
So what sort of time scale will we, because the next meeting is until September, is it?
September,
which seems an awful long time to be waiting for a sign-off that should have been done several months ago. So when I'm just asking the question, when's it going to be signed off? Because it seems an awful long time.
I'd probably have to pass to Lisa, because at the moment we're waiting for information to do our work.
It's difficult to give definitive timescales, Councillor Sankey. Obviously, we're working towards that. We've got those valuations. It has thrown up some issues that have needed to be looked into, but they are in a position to be ready to present to the auditors. But due to the timescales since the draft accounts were signed, there are other issues that have cropped up in terms of post-balance sheet events. For example, the pension triennial review has happened since the draft accounts were signed. So that means we need to revisit the pension liability. So we're working on that at the moment. We've got some revised figures from the actuary, but of course that means we've got to work through that and the auditors. If the changes are needed, they need to audit the revised figures as well.
So I understand you've got a lot of work on, which is why there's a recommendation that's supporting you to make sure your capacity is adequate, and 100%, 110% support that. My question is, accepting that you've got a lot of work and it's planned out, when are the external auditors going to get the valuations, and when then are the external auditors going to sign them off so our accounts are signed off? Has that been unreasonable asking that question? Sorry.
So in an ideal world, obviously we would be in a position to conclude by the end of the next meeting in September. Yeah. But that's dependent on the auditors being available when we have information available for them to look at.
That's 3 months away. You don't even seem positive that we can do it in 3 months. Am I missing something?
I'm not sure
what the issue underlying problem. From an audit point of view, I'm keen to get the account signed off.
I think everybody's in the same boat.
But I don't hear any. This is the date of when, next month we'll have that done. External auditors will turn this around within a month. That's the plan. What is the plan?
Planning in an ideal world is for us to be in a position come next September, this September, to have the account signed off. However, that's dependent on resources, both internally within finance and also with the external auditors being available. Bear in mind they've got audit plans around NHS work and other local government work for 22-23.
Chair, that doesn't give me a great deal of confidence. When was the account supposed to be signed off? I think it was the end of December.
As we've said before, though, this is a national issue. We're not in isolation.
There are
scarce resources within the finance team, with the external auditors as well.
Yeah, it's just that at the moment we don't seem to be having a message of when it's been signed off, other than September, which is over a year late for our accounts.
Well, I think the auditors have already said that if, even when we pass over the valuations, it depends on what challenges and questions they put forward and getting responses from the external valuers.
Okay. I'm just slightly concerned about this.
So we're working towards September, and ideally we'll be in a position to have signed off by then.
Would it be possible or appropriate for the committee to get updates in between now, September progress updates? No. I appreciate there may not be any, but if anything happens, would it be possible?
We can do that by email.
Councillor Peter, sorry.
Is there any adverse impact on our risk profile from this activity while we're experiencing these delays?
No, because the issues with the accounts relate to asset valuations and pension figures, which don't impact on our usable reserves. So it's not affecting any of the council's resources or medium-term plans, for example. They're notional figures to a large extent.
You did say, though, when you responded to the I'll take this out of context, that there are issues around resource.
Within the finance team, staffing. Staffing.
And is there a plan to recruit?
We've already been out to recruit, yes. So, as the response says in the external audit report, we're out to recruit. It's a very difficult recruitment market for local government finance specialists. For the senior post that we've gone out to recruit for, we've had no applications, and the limited applications for more junior posts, and the quality is not where we would like it to be. So we need to look at alternative arrangements.
Chair, with your agreement, could we ask when you get this interim progress report, you get an interim progress report around How's that going?
Yeah.
At the same time, would you mind doing that?
Would that be okay, Lisa?
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve was first, I think. Sorry, Councillor Sankey.
Steve, sorry. Yeah. Fine. Just picking up on that, on my note, the external report does highlight governance risk reporting needs improving. I think that's one of your comments. Does that relate to picking up Councillor Peter's comments about working on the risk side? Could you possibly elaborate a bit more on that, please? Because clearly, I'm conscious that Lisa's under a lot of pressure, and she's working the team's working very hard under very limited, you know, with difficult resourcing requirements, and it does feel a difficult situation.
Yeah, sorry, just to be clear, are you talking about the recommendation on page 13 about risk report? Yeah, so the risk reporting is just some enhancements to how risk is, well, first of all, kind of recorded in risk registers, but then ultimately reported through the governance of the council. So there's a few things that we would like to sort of see in terms of good risk management reporting would be very clear in terms of what the risk was, what the consequence would be if it materialised, and kind of what the cause would be. We'd also expect there to be quite clear action plans in terms of what you're going to do to try and mitigate any risk as well. So that what we'd expect to see describe as smart actions, so very specific, measurable, realistic actions, which with a time scale put upon it. So it's just getting a few enhancements into the risk reports that are presented within the council.
So a few enhancements, is it sort of we're nearly there at risk management, or we've got some big, great big holes?
It's a fair question. This is an improvement recommendation, so this is an enhancement rather. This isn't a significant weakness as such. It's more about improving what already exists rather than a big gap in your arrangements.
So if it didn't happen, it wouldn't have seriously adversely affect the operation of the council?
We'd obviously recommend that it's put into place as soon as you can, but it's not I wouldn't say it's a kind of significant issue that needs urgent action yet.
So it is not something that is urgent for us to address. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Councillor Wilson, do you still have a question?
Yeah, I share both my councillors on opposite sides of me their concerns, but I have to say that I don't think we've ever been in this position on the accounts in all the time I've been on the council. It's an unusual position to be in. Doesn't say that we've got to accept it, but it's an unusual thing for us to be in this position. I've never known it ever. So we need to keep a tight rein on what's going on. We need to be updated. But at the moment, raise concerns, but let's see where we go, because we've never been in this position before. We've been one of the best councils in the country for signing off our accounts on time, when there's been most of the councils way, way behind. We've always been there, and I'm not happy that it's happened, but it has, so we need to now work together to make sure that it's sorted.
Yeah, I think councils can agree. Lisa, you're saying this is a national issue. This has happened to nearby local authorities, and do you have an idea of how many it's happening to? Are we a real outlier, or are we in line with everybody else?
Yes, I was just going to come in and make that point, Chair, thank you. So I think we've got a lot of new members on the committee, and to put things into context, this is a national issue. At the last sort of head count, there was around 70 or 80% of authorities in a very similar position to us, and it's driven by changes by the regulator, which has meant that the external auditor has had to do significantly more testing and challenging work. And obviously there's a knock-on effect to the finance team as a result of that work. And as I say, we are in a very similar position to a lot of authorities up and down the country, and some in significantly worse position. Quite a lot of authorities have got several years' worth of accounts that haven't been signed off and audited.
Great, thank you, Lisa. Steve?
Chair, could we sort of, as a benchmark, sort of compare with what we're doing, what the statutory authorities are, where they are? Because I know that a number of them are struggling, so it would be a good reassuring benchmark if somebody could sort of circulate where we are with all the other Staffordshire authorities and signing theirs off, because then it would give us confidence that we're not outliers. Yeah. I mean, or the benchmark group. But I think Staffordshire would be a sort of good bench, good group to as a starting point.
At my last head count, there was at least half of the districts not signed off, and both the County Council and Stoke had got several years unaudited accounts.
I wouldn't expect anything less from Stoke.
I've no word there.
Are we minuting that one? Great, thank you, Lisa. I think Councillor has said it right. Whatever we can do to pull together, and also what the committee can do to support you, Lisa, in any of that, then I'm sure we're happy to help. I just have one question, if that's okay, from my angle. You mentioned the report mentions the savings plan a couple of times. So on page 7, councils have a formal savings plan. And on page 18, the follow-up of the previous recommendations, it says the council could consider a savings plan as part of the next MTFS. It felt like you were hovering over that as a recommendation, but not quite there, maybe misreading it. But could you explain the logic behind talking about that but not making a recommendation?
Yes, that's fine. So I think this kind of does boil back down to the council's relatively strong financial position. So the council hasn't, unlike many authorities up and down the country, actually needed a formal savings plan. A lot of what the council has done, for example, has been able to kind of address any budget gaps through kind of increased investment income and things like that. And certainly that was the case in 22-23. So as a result, there hasn't necessarily been a need to do what we would describe as a formal savings plan, with very kind of line-by-line itemised kind of ways of saving and then monitoring that on a formal basis. Typically, we would recommend that there's always a savings plan in place, but because you've been in a relatively strong financial position, we decided that it probably wasn't warranted that you'd need a savings plan. Clearly, if your financial position did take a turn for the worst, your budget gap started to increase, we would then expect to see more rigour around a formal savings plan being agreed as part of the annual budget, and then monitored after that. But the reason why there isn't a recommendation in the report at the moment is just pure because of the council's financial position and it being relatively strong when we benchmark it across the country.
Brilliant, thank you for that, makes sense. Any final questions from colleagues? In that case, thank you, Andy. Thank you, Lisa. We'll move on to our next item. So that's item 8. Back to Andy for the informing the audit risk assessment item.
Thanks, Chair. This technically is actually your document. It's a set of questions that we've asked of management, and the responses are provided back by management. We do ask that this paper go through Audit Committee because we want Audit Committee members to be confident in the responses provided by management, that they're kind of reflective of your understanding. I appreciate many members here are new to the Audit Committee, so that might be quite a difficult challenge for you, but I think it is a good process that you see sight of what management have responded, and we obviously then take these inquiries and use it to inform our risk assessment and planning for the 22-23 audit. So in terms of the responses, I said they are management responses. If there are any questions for me in terms of the questions asked, I'm more than happy to take any questions. I think in terms of the responses, it may well be for Lisa to respond to.
Great, thank you. Over to colleagues. Okay, everyone seems happy with that. Brilliant, thank you, Andy. So let's get back to my agenda. So this is number 9, the external audit plan for the year ending 31st March 2023. And again, we're back to Andy.
Thank you, Chair. So yes, this is the external audit plan for the 22-23 audit. We have completed our planning work, and the work is due to start on the audit later in the year, with the anticipation that we will be hopefully signing off on time this year, which would probably be around about November time, which is the sort of plan time scales. Obviously, we do need to sign off 21-22 though before that happens, but hopefully that, I say, will happen before the September meeting. So this plan sets out our kind of audit approach. The significant risks that are listed on page 6 of the report are the same as the ones that we identified last year. There generally isn't usually much change in terms of the account risks. But just for clarity, the management override controls, which is a presumed risk that would always happen, we have to do work to make sure that management are not overriding the controls in place at the council, to ensure that there isn't fraud or material error in the accounts. We then obviously have significant risks around valuation of land and buildings, and also the pension liability, on the basis that they are two fairly significant estimates and quite complex estimates that appear in your accounts. Obviously, we have hit problems in the valuation of the land and buildings in the prior year. Hopefully, with the new valuation and hopefully better information to support the valuation, we can avoid some of the problems that we encountered last year. So obviously, we'll be looking to work very closely with your new valuer. In terms of materiality levels, we set an audit materiality level, which is essentially kind of a range of error that we tolerate within a set of accounts. Obviously, there are a number of estimates and a number of judgments that management need to make, so we do apply tolerance to the accounts when we're doing the audit. We set that at 1.4 million, which is roughly speaking about 2% of your overall gross expenditure in the year. Any errors, either in aggregate or individual, that go over that amount in any direction, if management didn't adjust for them, that would be a qualification issue. Obviously, if we did find errors of that magnitude, typically we would expect management to adjust the accounts. So, yeah, just wanted to be very clear about the 1.4. In the previous year, it was about 1 million, so it has gone up a little bit, but that's largely because your gross spend has moved a little bit. In terms of timing, we are anticipating starting in kind of back end of July into August, and I'd say hopefully we'll be coming back to the November meeting. If there is a meeting in November, hopefully to finalise the audit at that point. But in terms of the rest of the report and the rest of the plan, I'm more than happy to take any questions that members may have.
Thanks, Andy. Again, over to colleagues. Any questions? Steve.
I was particularly interested in your comment that we hope to sign the accounts off in December. November. Maybe I just misheard you. Given that one of the arguments of why it's taken so long now is it's a national problem, why should it, has the national problem been solved? Because if it's taken an extra year, taking longer to sign them off now because it's a national problem, why is it suddenly beginning to be resolved in the next few months? Am I making myself clear that... Because we're a year late now and suddenly you're saying the next one's going to be bang on time. But we have got a national problem in this area of getting it done. So it doesn't quite... The two messages don't quite add up.
No, but I think that's I'll try and explain it the best I can. So there is a national problem in terms of the account. There is a backlog of audits, quite a sizable number of audits that are not signed off for 21-22. And as Lisa said, there are some authorities with several years that not. So that's the national problem. The reason why each individual council is delayed does differ slightly. Now, there are capacity. In some councils there are finance capacity issues. In some cases, the auditor themselves are struggling to resource it. Part of the issue here has been the valuations, which is a bit more... Yes, we are doing more work across every single authority, but I think some of the issues that we encountered here around your old valuer who did the valuations last year and the information that they could provide when we started asking questions is quite specific to this authority. So there are some specific issues why the audit here was delayed. If those issues hadn't occurred on the valuation, I think this audit would have been signed off many months ago. So, yes, there is a national problem, but I think some of the reasons for the delays here are probably quite specific to the valuation.
So our next meeting in September, 2 months before you effectively signed them off, you'll be able to give us that warm glow of confidence that we'll be signing them off in 2 months' time?
The 22-23, yeah, because we'll be starting...
I always look forward to these things, you see.
Just to be clear, we're not just waiting to do 21-20. We will be starting the 22-23 audit, so they'll be running simultaneously in terms of the work. So yeah.
Okay, I'll look forward to the meeting.
Previous Street. Great, thank you, Andy. Lisa, does he want to come in, or did Andy cover your point? Right, thank you. Anybody else? In that case, we'll move on. Thanks again, Andy. Our next, the Head of Internal Audit Opinion Report for 22-23, which is 360 Assurance. I think that's Ruby.
Thank you, Chair. Evening, everyone. I'll take the report as read. I would just like to point out that as it relates to 22-23, you'll still see it badged up as CW Audit. Everything moving forward for 23-24 will be under the badge of 360 Assurance. So I just thought I'd explain that difference for the new members, so to avoid the confusion between our names. We are providing significant assurance on our work. We have completed 18 assurance reviews. Sort of Appendix 1 outlines the assurance levels provided, and we've made 58 recommendations across all the audits completed. And I'm happy to take any questions that anyone has. I'm ready, Steve, don't worry.
Through the chair.
No, sorry.
Over to Steve. I suspect we have the same question based on what you asked earlier. Yeah, over to you.
Well, one of the questions I said earlier is that, well, I've got two or three questions that you'd probably expect. Your opinion is significant assurance, however, some weakness in the design and or inconsistent application of controls put the achievement of particular objectives at risk. Would you like to elaborate?
That significant assurance is that generally everything is okay, but because you haven't got full assurance across every single review, we've made recommendations to enhance the controls in place. That's what that sentence is alluding to.
Yeah, some weaknesses in design and or inconsistent application of control. So we're not designing them or we're not applying them properly.
Possibly, but that's where we pick those individual...
I was just asking
which
ones.
We pick those issues up in the individual assignments.
So I was just interested in which are the areas that we've got concerns
about. Well, it's not necessarily concerns. It's because across the individual audit reviews... issues have been identified.
What does this statement actually mean then? Some weaknesses. What does it? Sorry, I'm being my simple soul, but I'm not quite sure what. If you say there's some weaknesses and we are not weaknesses in our design and we're not applying it properly, well, that was my interpretation. Put the achievement of particular objectives at risk. So what objectives are at risk? Am I missing something?
So the internal audit plan, when it's designed and brought to audit committee to be approved, is a risk-based plan linked to the council's corporate objectives. Now, if all those reviews that the internal auditors have conducted throughout the year were full assurance, then great, it's a perfect world, but that's highly unlikely. So throughout the year in conducting the reviews, there's been a number of recommendations made, which is flagged up at the back of the report. Most of those items are at the lower scale of the risk.
Yes, I've got a question on that one as well.
So overall, significant assurance is a positive position for the council? And therefore, you know, it's a positive report for the committee to receive.
Maybe positive. So is it a positive, but are there, you know, I just assume our role is to ask the questions, are there any holes that we are at risk of falling into?
And are there weaknesses and problems? Because one of the things that seems to be missing from your report that was in the previous year's report is how many recommendations have been completed, not completed.
Yes.
Right? And that was in the previous year's report, and suddenly it's not in this report. And I wondered why it was missing.
No, there is a comment on that in this report. It's to do with our transfer over and our merger with 360 Assurance, because we had to do a data transfer at the end of the year, so the recommendation tracking systems have changed. Well, so
don't take it the wrong way.
No.
I don't care how your audits change, who owns it, which audit. Last year's, it said, this is the number of recommendations we had, and this is how many have been done, and this is how many haven't been completed, which was a really useful thing. Gives us an assurance. This report doesn't have it in. And I think it should have it in.
And you said there's a new system, Ruby, that Ruby makes up?
There's a new online tracking system which has gone live from April the 1st. So now it's like the old system. It will ping out an email to the relevant person when an action is due and request an update. But in order to get transfer of data from one system to another, we had to take it down, and hence it was the same time to meet the deadlines for the end of year report. So we took, from a practical point of view, not all the reports were on the old system for us to be able to transfer and do that.
So this is an impact of your change in audit, that we haven't got the information we had the previous year.
It's just purely a timing issue. So you'll have a new style of progress report, and we are tracking the recommendations from 22-23.
But you can see where
absolutely.
You can see my point of view. You say we've got
it's not a deliberate omission,
and you're not giving us the information of, and then you say, oh, we're not even telling you what the how many have been completed and what haven't. It doesn't feel give me that nice warm glow in as some.
Ruby's explanation seems to make sense at the same time.
Well, it makes sense for ongoing, but,
but throughout the year, our progress reports have told you the ones that have been implemented and the ones that are outstanding, and we have provided commentary throughout the year on those.
Yeah. Well, could I actually suggest there's a way around this? There's an action on the internal audit to provide that information as an email in correspondence to this committee, so that we know how well we're doing this year compared to the previous year.
Is that easily achieved through your system?
I'll have to take that back, Chair, and just see if I can pull that information.
Yeah, that would be okay. If you could let us know if it's possible.
Yeah, I'll go away and take that away and find out. Lisa,
So can I just re-emphasise what Ruby's already said, that the updates are regularly reported to the committee throughout the year, and there's been no concerns raised. So, this isn't particularly something new or concerning. And obviously, in future meetings, there will be updates from the internal auditors.
And I totally agree that, but we have got two areas of issues that are raised in your report, and quite rightly so: commercial property management and car park income. Right?
Yeah.
Quite reasonably. And both of them talk about having things done. And the car park income, I believe, the message, I'm reading this as it is now been addressed, so there is no issue for that. That's a transient position. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes. So when we completed the audit, there has been a turnover of staff, there was long-term sickness, and that was in the process of being addressed by the team. So we are following up those actions.
So you don't know yet if it's been addressed? You do know it's been addressed. Sorry,
No, we're finding out whether they've been addressed. The updates have been requested from management.
Right, so we don't know that that one's been resolved, even though it says in the report action has been subject to addressing.
As part of the management responses that came back to us, there was work ongoing to address that, so that's what the position statement was at the time.
Going to address it or addressed it? Sorry, I'm being pedantic on this.
Without going back to the original report,
both in the process of being addressed. The car parking one is largely complete. It's simply on the basis of waiting for some third party information.
Right.
Now, the commercial property one, I believe we've put in a follow up review for this year to look at that again, because obviously it was moderate assurance
So it
may well be that the committee might want to do the same for the car parking.
This, when I read this, action has subsequently been taken to address these weaknesses. When you're talking there, you haven't actually confirmed that. I think it would be good to be reassured that we have got that.
So on all the recommendations, they're based on management assurance. However, where in the past, very occasionally, we've had moderate assurance reviews.
We've had two.
Very limited. Then, obviously, it's a suggestion for the committee, but that might be an area where you might want to ask internal audit to go back and do a reassessment.
That sounds sensible.
And then give you that assurance.
Right. Could I pick up then on the property management? It highlights various things there. However, the implementation of the five recommendations remain dependent on the introduction of the new terrier system. When?
Thank you. I was going to ask the same question.
It just seems to sort of doesn't give me that sort of warm glow on a summer evening.
I've checked the updates received, and the team have investigated, and they were about to go out to procurement on a new system.
They've gone out to procure.
They were about to, and then the IT department have also offered their services to create a bespoke system. So procurement has been paused while they investigate that and develop further.
So there's no plans.
How do you mean plans?
Well, do we know if the plan is to procure it now?
Well, that is the latest update. So
you know they're going to go out.
They've gone
out for procurement, or they're going out for procurement?
They were in discussions with suppliers. They were in negotiating a contract with the preferred supplier, and then other discussions with IT have taken place. That's been paused while these other discussions take place.
So I presume there's some kind
of... So it's ongoing. Yeah. The development or procurement of a new system is ongoing.
I presume there's some kind of cost-benefit analysis. Now about the offer from IT, there must have to be considered the merits and the nots of that versus the commercial approach.
Yes. Yeah.
So we haven't actually got... So we're at the sort of early stages of options appraisal, for want of a better description. Am I right in that? It sounds like it. Yeah. Option appraisal, internal or package.
It sounds like the external appraisal must have gone a long way down.
It did. They'd gone to see a demonstration. They'd been in touch with suppliers, and they'd agreed the parameters of the system.
So it would be nice to know again. When will it be plonked on the desk, and when will the data, presumably, because the data will have to be, it'll have to be populated with all this data. So when will this concern that you've got and raised be addressed is really what I'm getting to.
Thank you, Steve. Lisa.
So I think possibly what I'm hearing from your councillor, Sankey, is you'd like an update, the committee would to ask for an update from the head of service, the relevant head of service.
Yeah.
Obviously, if that's the consensus of the group, we can take that forward.
Councillor Peters.
When you say an update, Lisa, I'm getting a strong message here. We don't want words. I've programme in the background, it's worked for almost 40 years, and I'd like to see timelines, Gantt charts, demonstrable milestones. That's the sort of information I would think the head of service would have on its identity. So if you could accommodate that in terms of let's see some demonstrable milestones, that's what performance is measured against, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, project manager, love a Gantt chart. So maybe, Lisa, maybe we could have a chat about what members might want to see in the report, and we could work that up together.
It will be a response from the relevant chief officer. You know, that's how it works. So we can ask them to put timelines in if that's what the committee wants.
Well, I mean, if you don't get timelines, there's no point in asking them, because there's an audit recommendation here that says you need something in there to effectively manage to hit those five recommendations. We just need to know when it's going to take place, when it's going to be implemented. Therefore, tick, we've addressed that concern. That's what I'm looking at.
There's clear mention here, Chair, from you about about smart measures, adopting smart measures in delivery and execution of this piece of work. I haven't seen the word rank rating anywhere. So how are we going to measure it in a smart method? We'll be interested to see what unpacks.
So when the audit recommendations were originally made, obviously each of those recommendations does have a risk scoring attached to them. So it is addressed in that manner. So apologies if I'm stepping on your toes there, Ruby.
Okay, thank you. So we'll take that forward then. If that suits members, we'll ask at least Ruby colleagues kindly for an update on progress. And we'll share that obviously with the committee in between meetings. Thank you. Any other comments on the internal report? No. Thank you. Thank you, Ruby. Thank you, Lisa. So the next item is the revenue and capital outturn report for 2023 Q4. That was over to Lisa.
Thank you, Chair. So this report covers the draft outturn position for 22-23 financial year, covering the revenue, capital budget, treasury management activities, business rates retention, as well as a summary of the key corporate strategic risk facing the authority. Section 4 of the report covers the revenue budget. In line with early reports during the year, the report highlights that despite significant ongoing pressures from the COVID-19 pandemic, and the current economic conditions, these have been offset by an increase in returns on our investments and increased recycling income due to higher commodity prices during the year. This means that after taking into account corporate budgets, which included a provision for COVID-19 pressures, this has resulted in an overall net windfall underspend of £0.564 million for the year. Overall, the outturn, therefore, is extremely favourable, taking into account the current economic conditions. However, earlier reports and the medium-term financial strategy have both set out that the Council faces significant risks associated with supported housing claims in respect of private landlord providers, for which the government doesn't fully provide subsidy. The forecast backward-looking risk as at 31st of March 23 is around 1.6 million, of which 0.9 is held in a specific reserve to mitigate this risk. So again, in line with earlier reports, members are therefore being asked, or Cabinet will be asked to consider setting aside the revenue outturn of 0.6 million, just under, in order to top up that specific reserve. Paragraphs 4.2 and 4.3 of the report provide some narrative around the significant variations against the budget for the full year. And Appendix D sets out carry forward items largely requested by managers and chief officers, for Cabinet to consider, totaling £130,000. In addition, paragraph 4.6 sets out unspent sums of £238,000, which it is suggested for Cabinet to consider carrying forward for the allocation during the course of the year, or as part of the development of the medium-term financial strategy for 24-25 onwards, to support priorities in the revised corporate plan, including community support, energy efficiency and hardship funding. Section 5 covers treasury management. There is a more detailed report on your agenda coming up next in terms of treasury management, but Section 5 provides a brief summary and shows our investment stood at £56.3 million at the end of the year, with the average rate of return at 2.08%, which is significantly higher than the budget when the budget was set due to the fast-changing economic conditions. A full schedule of investments is attached to Appendix B in the normal manner. External borrowing stood at £11 million at the end of March. Although the report does highlight at paragraph 4.6, in line with the approved treasury management strategy, a decision was made in April 23, so obviously outside of 22-23, to repay £4.5 million of market loan debt early, resulted in estimated cost savings of around £60,000 per annum. That repayment does not change the council's underlying need to borrow. It simply moves this element from internal borrowing to internal borrowing from external borrowing, which is more cost effective based on the forecast for interest rates. And obviously we're reporting that at this point in time because it's the earliest time since the decision was made. Overall, our treasury management activities were in line with the approved treasury management strategy. Section 6 of the report covers the capital programme and it sets out expenditure against a programme of £9.2 million. A number of projects are either ongoing or taking place over several years, and as such it's recommended to Cabinet to carry forward £6.7 million to enable these projects to continue. The report also shows in-year expenditure of £5.7 million against the Town's Fund programme, totalling £27.8 million. The table at paragraph 6.2 highlights a total of £88,000 of funding that is no longer required and will be available when the capital programme is refreshed. And then finally, the table at 6.6 shows capital receipts generated in year of just over £1 million. Section 7 covers the business rates retention scheme. Business rates retention scheme was originally introduced back in 2013 and now forms a principal element of local authority funding. It provides local authority with some direct financial benefit from economic growth in the area, but also exposure to financial risks from business rates volatility. Now, business rates income does tend to be quite volatile and risky because of the level of appeals that come through from the Valuation Office. Nevertheless, the table at 7.2 of the report sets out a draft surplus of £1.2 million, which was largely taken into account when the MTFS was 23-24 onwards. In addition to this, the Council is also expected to receive a windfall sum of £0.2 million from the business rates pool with the other statutory authorities. Then finally, Section 8 covers risk management, and Appendix C is a report of the report is a schedule of the most significant corporate and strategic risks facing the authority, together with measures taken to manage these risks. And then finally, Section 14, there's a number of recommendations for Cabinet to consider. So really, it's just for this committee to note. I'm happy to take any questions through you, Chair.
Thank you, Lisa. I had a question. I mean, I had an observation. It was pretty depressing that we managed to spend £61,000 extra in standards work last year related to our conduct. But I think that's council locked to take for those days behind us. My question was around the business rates retention revaluation. That was down for April 2023. Has that happened, revaluation?
It has indeed, yes.
And do you have the figure to hand? Do you know if it exposes us more or less?
Well, it's designed to effectively be neutral in theory.
Okay.
It takes a few years to work through the adjustments, though, the way the government do the mechanism. So,
okay.
Time will tell.
So, present exposure doesn't change?
That's right, yes.
Okay. Thank you. Colleagues, Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Chair. I've got a few questions on the report, if I may. One is on section 2.4. You report that the average rate of return, this is probably just clarification, is 2.08%, which is a lot better than it was 12 months before that. But in quarter three, you reported at 2.96, so it seems to have gone down from quarter three to quarter four, given that we all know that interest rates are only going one way at the moment, unfortunately. Is that just an interpretation looking at the whole year?
This is the whole year, Councillor Sankey, so it may well be that was at the end of the position at the end of the quarter, as opposed to the whole year.
At the end
of... So there's two figures that we report, the position for the whole year, but and also the position at the end of that quarter.
And I understand that if it's at the end of quarter three and it's 2.96, then surely if interest rates are going up, it will only be higher at the end of quarter four, is my logic.
You're stretching my GCSE maths, but I know to least the explanation.
Sadly, I've got a degree in mathematics and statistics, and it doesn't.
So, is the difference between a snapshot as at the end of the quarter, okay, as opposed to the cumulative position throughout the year?
Right, so, what we would actually get at that one point in time. Okay.
So, one figure is the sort of mean throughout the year, the other is the Q4 snapshot. Okay. Yeah.
Right, section 2.6, this is about reserves, and it says, as at the 31st of March, the reserves are estimated to be confirmed. Looking at all, you know, just taking the exact same report from 12 months ago, you reported that it was 21.6 and the previous year was 18.3 million. What's the level of reserves rather than to be confirmed?
So as it says there, it's to be confirmed, so the finance team were still finalising the accounts and working through the business rates figures into the ledger, so they will be ready for cabinet.
So when will this committee, will we be told what the reserves are, Chair?
I can certainly circulate an email.
That'd
once
be
the
great.
Report's finalised.
Okay.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. 2.8 is my next one. Outturn positions carry forward sums for managers and chief officers totalling 130,000. My sort of initial question is, have we got enough budget in this area, or too much? What's the rationale for carry forward of that size for managers and chief officers?
So most of the items generally, sorry, through you, Chair, generally carry forwards are where works have been commissioned or goods have been commissioned but not received by the end of the financial year. So the money's in the budget, it's just that the goods or works haven't been received.
Yeah.
So effectively then the budget manager would request for that to be carried forward.
So... And I get that, you know, you've ordered and you've got some examples of the webcasting. We plan to do that, we've got the money there, we haven't quite done it, we carry it forward to the next year and spend it there. Got that. But this is talking about managers and chief officers. So it's not salaries. This isn't salaries we're talking about, this is just...
Right.
So that would be unspent, non-salary budget.
Yes.
Board, yeah. Thank you.
Generally.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't think I've got many more, actually. The one I had got was on the recommendation for the reserves, which I'm struggling to find which page it's on. I'm sure you can... bear with me, apologies. It might be just me, and maybe if somebody in the room can clarify, but as you quite rightly said, reserve carry forwards are often for things that were planned to be done in the year, not quite able to make it, like, as you put there, the web streaming, we couldn't do it in time, we carried it forward. I get that. I don't understand the logic of having in this space... the members' allowance to support the revised scrutiny arrangements that are a carry forward. I've no problem with them in the budget. I understand that the rationale from the policy point of view, but given that as of the year ending the end of March, there was no plans for any additional scrutiny, how are we carrying it forward to do for the next year?
Thank you. Lisa, do you have a response?
In effect, it's largely amounts been put forward by chief officers and service managers. However, a full council decision has been made around that item.
The issue of actually providing in the budget is not my issue. Is not my question. I'm not unhappy about the amount of money allocated for that purpose. My comment is that for carry forwards from one year to the next, on a process point of view, how can you carry something forward that wasn't even known about or understood at the, in that year? Maybe there's enough auditors around the room that can tell me. If that's a sensible thing, I'll shut up. But I'd never thought it was.
The underspend was known about when the decision was made by full council.
Full council this year?
Yes, full council made a decision to incur additional costs, and the report set out how that would be funded, and it was to be funded from the underspend.
It doesn't come over as a carry forward.
It was set out in the council report.
Okay. May I ask the colleagues in order to test if this is normal practice? Just doesn't seem very open and transparent type of thing.
Well, it was set out in the council report, and it's set out in this report. I don't think we can be any more transparent than that.
Just out of my interest, which council report was it?
It was the one that looked at the appointments to committees and increased the number of scrutiny committees, and therefore there was an additional cost to having an additional chairperson.
And again, I'm not unhappy about the actual. I understand the cost bit. It's just how it's presented is the issue to me. It doesn't feel very open and transparent to me the way it's presented. The money is not the issue. I'm not unhappy. Well, it's the presentation bits that I'm just raising.
It's been presented in a public report to full council, and it's also in this report that's a public report that's open to the public, and it's also going through the groups and scrutiny. We can't be any more open and transparent than that, I don't think, Councillor Kosanke.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa. Any more comments on that item? Councillors?
I think what happened was at the last full council meeting, we've obviously missed that, Steve, in the report. I don't think you were there. I'm not happy that the underspend from last year are going forward to finance new things for this year, but if we missed it and it went through full council, then I'm sorry, we can't do anything about it.
Thank you. Okay, if we're happy with that one, we'll move on to the next item. So we're on to...
Chair.
Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think as long as it has gone through a transparent governance process, which it has in terms of going through council, it is proper process. That's what you'd expect. I think as long as that's happened, which I think in this particular case it has, it wouldn't cause us any concerns from an external audit. I understand. I do understand that, but it wouldn't necessarily give rise to a concern from ourselves.
And I do apologise, I wasn't at the last council meeting because the date changed and my wife told me I was on holiday.
No choice, no. Thank you.
Yeah, and if I remember rightly, I don't think that our party voted for the committees.
I can't recall.
So that's probably where it's coming.
Yeah, could be that. But thank you, Lisa and Andy, for the explanation. And that's good to know that from your point of view it wouldn't be something that you'd be concerned about. Okay, thank you. We're nearly there. Number 12 is the annual Treasury Management Report, and that's from our, I guess this is a new title. Congratulations, Interim Chief Accountant. Yeah.
Thank you.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. This report is one of the two statutory reports.
I'll start again. Move the mic. This report is one of the three statutory reports required to be received and approved by the Council about the Treasury Management Service of the Authority. These reports are required to be reviewed by the Audit Committee prior to be considered by full Council. This final annual report looks at the actual prudential and Treasury indicators and actual Treasury operations for 22-23 compared to the estimates within the Treasury Management Strategy Statement and the Annual Investment Strategy, which was approved by Council in March 2022, and expands on the information provided within the Capital and Revenue Outturn Report for 22-23. Highlights in the report include the level of the investment income returns would have exceeded budget by 1.1 million. This is due to the rapidly changing economic conditions, which resulted in increased interest rates since the TMSS was first agreed in March 2022. The council's external borrowing level is £11,057,000 as at the 31st of March 2023. No additional external borrowing was undertaken during the year, and there's been a small repayment against the authority's PWLB annuity loans. The capital financing requirement, the underlying need to borrow, has decreased by £1.5 million during the year. This net reduction in the year is due to the statutory debt repayments made on an annual basis through the minimum revenue provision, £842,000, and voluntary repayments from capital receipts, totaling £960,000, in line with our approved policy. The overall CFR, though, is higher than expected due to the timing of capital receipts that has been committed to the reduction in the underlying need to borrow. However, at £14.326 million, the capital financing requirement remains above the external borrowing level of £11 million, and this underborrowing reduces the counterparty risk as well as being cost-effective in the current market conditions. There is a summary of the prudential indicator results provided in Appendix 3. In summary, overall, the Council's treasury management activities during 22-23 have been in line with the approved strategy. The recommendation asks members to review the annual treasury management report for 22-23 and associated prudential code indicators, and to make any comments or observations to full Council as the committee may see fit. Chair, any questions?
Great, thank you, Anya. I liked all the reports, but I really enjoyed this one. I just geeked out to the last bit. Like reading The Economist, it was great. Really enjoyed it. Any questions?
Very happy
with it. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Okay. Got away lightly. You please count for Sankey. That's I think you see what yeah. Great, thank you. In that case, we'll move on. So final substantive item on the agenda. It's back to Lisa for the annual governance statement 22-23, and this is the one item tonight that we're approving rather than noting.
Thank you, Jeff. This is the annual governance statement. The council, like all local authorities, is responsible for ensuring that its business is conducted in accordance with the law and proper standards, and that public money is safeguarded and properly accounted for and used economically, efficiently and effectively. As part of our constitution, the council has adopted a code of corporate governance, which is consistent with the Sit for Solace framework for good governance in local government. This statement explains how the council has complied with the code and also meets the requirements of the audit and accounts regulations. The document at section 3 explains to stakeholders our governance arrangements and how the controls we have in place manage risks of failure to deliver stated priorities. So there are lots of examples in the governance statement, but just as a few examples, of course we've got approved constitution setting out how the council operates, a clear statement of corporate objectives with a corporate plan and service plan aligned with the medium-term financial strategy. And of course you'll be aware that there's regular monitoring of the corporate performance and financial performance throughout the year. Section 4 of the statement sets out a review of the effectiveness of our governance arrangements, which is informed by work of senior managers within the authority, the Chief Internal Auditor's annual report, which of course you've already heard elsewhere on the agenda, and also comments and reports from our external auditors. And again, you've heard from our external auditors tonight. And again, there's just a few there's lots of examples in the statement, but there's been a review of the constitution, reviews of key strategies, including the MTFS, treasury strategy, the procurement policy, etc., and ongoing contract management and monitoring, for example, in relation to the leisure provider. Section 6 of the statement concludes that during 22-23, no significant governance issues arose. The statement does note that challenges brought on by the cost of living implications, which were managed effectively during 22-23, will continue to be closely monitored and any associated impacts will be responded to appropriately. And finally, the statement proposes that we will continue to maintain a level of governance at the authority while striving to improve wherever we can. The statement itself has been agreed with the leader of the council and the chief exec, who are both required to sign accordingly. And therefore the recommendation is that the committee reviews and approves the annual governance statement for 22-23 as appended to the agenda papers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Lisa. I had no questions on this, so it was really clear and comprehensive. Councillor Sankey, does have questions?
Thank you. I've just got a couple of questions, and one actually is, as the Chair actually raised at the training session, was around independent members. We've got in here in section 4 reference to two independent members, and I just feel that, you know, with the advice we've got, we should either try to get independent members or remove it. I mean, we should, you know, if it says in the government statement two independent members, we either push for two independent members or we actually say, yeah, we don't normally get two independent members, let's just remove it.
Yeah.
So I just think having the statement in there doesn't, and not doing anything about it, just is a bit disrespectful.
Yeah, myself and Lisa had a quick chat before, and you were saying there's a push nationally for councils to have the independent members. So we think we may have to put it on the agenda at a future meeting to discuss.
Fine.
So I think for now, it's perhaps worth keeping it in with a view to resolving something at the next meeting.
So really, if the message is the general national approach is to get independent members, then we should be looking for them. Then.
Yeah.
Okay. I just putting it there and not doing anything just didn't seem.
Yeah, you don't have things for the sake of it.
Which is what you effectively raised at the last meeting. Yeah. And
sorry, Steve, can I just stop? Lisa, do you want to come in on that point?
I was just going to say, if I may, Chair, we do have those vacant positions on the committee. We have had independent members in the past, but it is a very difficult recruitment exercise and finding anybody that wants to apply, quite frankly, let alone people with the requisite skill set.
I'm under no illusion that they must be mad to want to be on it, but I mean, but yeah. My next question was around just checking and I don't know why I put this down, do we conform to sector governance arrangements on this? And there must be something in there. I don't recall reading it must have been in the report somewhere, the document, so I'm assuming the answer is yes to that.
Sorry, can you just repeat the question again?
Do we conform to CIPFA government governance arrangements? It must be in here somewhere because I wanted to put it down in my notes. So this is
the statements in accordance with the CIPFA Solace framework.
Yeah. So it does.
So paragraph 3 of page 1, Steve, is that it's consistent with the principles of CIPFA Solace framework.
And have we completed the peer review actions to support that? Because I think the peer review supported that. So I think that was probably where I was coming from.
Thank you. Lisa, did you have anything to add?
So obviously the peer review had an action plan, and many of those actions were completed and working through the remainder.
So it might be just worth, given that a lot of those were related to governance, it might be worth picking that up, Chair, through you, to look into that.
Yeah, happy to pick that up. Lisa, maybe we could talk?
Certainly we can talk, but in terms of...
I'm not objecting to it. I'm just as a side issue from this,
yeah.
And the last point, you'll be pleased to know, supported housing is mentioned... in this is one of the issues, and quite rightly so. I'm not at all complaining about it because it is a serious concern. But given that we've also had an issue related to car parking, should that also be mentioned in this as well? And that, it's not a big point. It was just they were the two audit reports. Well, the two areas. The car parking was a new audit report. It's not a big issue for me. It just came out of it. I just said. So
is it worth
including
that one as well?
Thank you,
Lisa. Yeah. I can come in, Chair. Yes, obviously there is an issue around car parking raised in the internal audit report, but it does say in the internal audit report from the head of internal audit that there are no significant governance issues that the chief internal auditor believes that should be included in the annual governance statement.
It also said it was completed. It is. We believe it's completed.
but it's fundamentally not a significant enough issue to be in the report.
Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. Any more comments? In that case, we need to vote to approve. Okay. So all those in favour of approving the statement? Oh, my apologies. Yeah, propose to move to a vote. Yeah, Steve. Thank you. All those in favour? Against? Abstentions? Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So the last item is the date of the next meeting, which is the 20th of September. Just to flag, we potentially have training, don't we? So there's potential for the external audit training to be before the September meeting. I guess we'll confirm that. Yeah. We may see each other before then, if not 27th of September. Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you. We'll close the meeting then. Thank you very much to members and most importantly to officers for your reports and input. See you soon.